You're listening to Blind Entrepreneurship, an interview series podcast that highlights the stories of the top business professionals around the world. In each episode, we explore how entrepreneurs overcame blindness in business in order to execute their vision. This podcast is brought to you by Penji. I am your host, Jonathan Grzbowski, and today we have Craig Hanley on the show. Craig is an entrepreneur, which means so many things in today's world. He has done some speaking, some teaching, and even some mentoring. He is also a philanthropist and has given close to $1 million in the last 7 years, which is absolutely incredible. Kudos to you, Craig. He really views himself as an entertainer and a musician who moonlights as CEO of his $13 to $15 million company, Listen Trust, which was named number one in business products and services on Inc. magazine's 500 list. He also employs over 1,000 people. He believes in living life like an extreme sport. He's been in the armed forces and an absolute rock star. You can kind of just tell by the swagger, and if you do some research on Craig, you'll know what I'm talking about. But the man really is a rock star, and he lives it every single day. Some of the highlights of this episode for me was when Craig mentioned the importance of putting an idea out into the universe and how the universe somehow always makes it happen. He said at a very young age that he wanted to meet Richard Branson. He wanted to meet Paul McCartney and other people within the Beatles. He wanted to meet celebrities, rock stars, tour, and perform in front of 13,000 people. And he did all of that. In addition, he also built a 1,000-person company, which he also wanted to do, and he believed that he could do it. All because that initial idea of just putting it out into the universe, going out there and grabbing it. So, Craig, amazing story. Thank you for that. The other thing that he mentioned was about his story behind focusing on your employees, how to build a long-lasting company culture, and Craig's definition of an unbreakable company. And each of these answers are spread throughout the entire conversation. So in the first half, you'll hear about focusing on your employees' dreams. The second half is building a long-lasting company culture, and the tail end is going to be how to create an unbreakable company. So let's get right to it. Today's episode is sponsored by Penji. Are you in charge of marketing for your business and need graphic design support? Let Penji design anything you need for your business, from a logo to your marketing materials, sales sheets, social media content, and so much more. Penji helps you achieve more with unlimited graphic design support, daily output, and a dedicated project manager, all at one flat monthly rate. We have an exclusive offer to the Blind Entrepreneur community. Head over to penji.co and use the coupon code BLIND for 15% off your first month. Again, that's penji.co, P-E-N-J-I.co, and use the coupon code BLIND for 15% off your first month of Penji. And now, let's get to today's episode. Craig, welcome to the show.
How you doing? I'm glad to be here.
I'm doing fantastic. It's an honor to have you on. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a little bit because of your background and the research that I've done about your story, which is absolutely inspirational. And I love how you promote yourself on social media. But before we get into all of those fun things, your personality including, we have to kind of lay a foundation as to why you're a qualified expert to talk about a topic. So my first question, Craig, is why are you qualified to talk about focus and focusing on your employees' dreams, how to build a company culture, and an unbreakable company?
Well, I like to say we're all students, right? So I think we all have a lot to learn. So from a humble point of view, I think there are a lot of people out there that are probably much smarter than me, but over 13 years, we've built a call center with around 1,000 employees. And we've had a lot of the things that we've gone through, including building out our culture. And we've grown from going with just core values to actually building out a program called Dream Trust, where we actually hire our employees. I just published a book, and the book's titled Hired to Quit. And when I hire my employees, I have a 2-day seminar. And what I teach them out of the gate is I mean, someday they're going to want to leave. Almost every job for somebody that's not their passion project is a stepping stone into what they're really ultimately going to be doing. And I always want the best for my children. I want the best for the people that work for me. And so what I do is I start to teach them how to quit and go after their dreams the day we hire them. Kind of unique approach to business. And Hired to Quit has been a bestseller in 5 categories on Amazon. And it's done really well. And a lot of that is based on the work we've done here at Listen Trust, my company. And the other side of this is I've managed to keep this business alive for 13 years, maintaining the revenue, maintaining doing around $150 million in sales each and every year. And we've done it through around 5 to 7 turnarounds, you know, where it's a call center business. And so we lose clients, we bring new clients on. We've had to think on our feet and be creative in the ways that we keep that revenue flowing. So I think I'm qualified in a lot of areas, but at the outset, I'm kind of a musician who kind of came up with a good idea, and I've managed to fumble my way through it and learn some things. And I'm hoping to share what I've learned with your audience. That's kind of it.
Well, again, thank you so much for being on. And I have to give a quick background, because something that is important to us here at Penji is our focus on employee dreams. So to give you context, I'd like to get your opinion on this. We always ask a question right before we hire, and it says, we ask, what is your dream and how can we help you accomplish that dream? So why is it important to you that you are hiring these people to basically quit?
When I was a kid, I wanted to be a musician. I wanted to be a rock star. And I got accepted to Berklee College of Music. I didn't have the money to go, so I joined the U.S. Army, you know, in order to create money to go to Berklee. But the U.S. Army gave me $750 a month, which, God love them, it paid for my rent while I went to college. And, you know, it was being a member of the U.S. Armed Forces is an honor, and certainly something I'm very proud of, having the ability, you know, to say I served my country. So I appreciate everything about that, but it wasn't paying for Berklee. So I was going to a local school studying music, and of course they kind of teach you on how to be a teacher. I don't think society is built to support people in what they dream of doing. But something happened. I went through a divorce, and when I was going through the divorce, I just kind of said, to hell with it. And I just started building this life plan of all the things I wanted to do, and said, I'm just going to go after it. And I ended up on Necker Island hanging out with Richard Branson. Mm-hmm. And I met him years before by pretending like I was security. So it was kind of cool. I asked him, I had wrapped a $20 bill around my business card and told it was the first 20 we were going to make together. It was so cool to see him on the island. I said, so you kept my 20. He goes, you don't get to be a billionaire without keeping people's money. He goes, $20 is $20.
Yeah, true.
I got a kick out of that. And he's an amazing man. And next thing you know, I was writing albums. I had a record contract offered to me. I opened for Coolio in front of 13,000 people. I wanted to meet the remaining Beatles. I ended up at Ringo's birthday party in an event by Music Cares with Paul McCartney talking to Richard. Paul put his arm around me and said, you know, do you mind if I talk to my friend? I turned and said, who do you think you are, Paul McCartney? Get out of here. I'm talking. And Richard was sitting with Yoko Ono at Ringo's birthday party. I met Joe Walsh and Steve Lukather. I mean, it was his birthday. It was all the people from that I grew up. I played basketball in my driveway and be playing these tapes. Some of your younger audience doesn't know what a tape is. But I'd be playing these tapes of the Cars and Toto and, you know, ELO. And I met Jeff Lynne. And I mean, and it was just amazing. I got to meet Ringo. George Harrison's wife was there. I wanted to meet the Dalai Lama, and I met him at an event in Calgary. It just seemed like every time I put something on paper, that the universe would conspire to create opportunity for me to live my dreams. Hmm. And so all of a sudden, I'm doing things that a kid from Maine who grew up, you know, I mean, I wouldn't say we were poor, I'd say we were middle class. But when I was living on my own, I had food stamps and WIC, and I had 2 kids and lived in my mother-in-law's basement. I mean... I come from a humble beginning, and here I am living this life that, I mean, 100 men would dream of living. And I'm just like, I got to teach other people how to do this. And I got to teach other people to go after their dreams and to be inspired and not to be fearful. I think in some ways it's like teaching faith, because I think religion and faith are separate topics. And I think I have so much faith that if I just believe that it could happen, the universe conspires to make it happen, that other people deserve to have that same opportunity to have faith in this wonderful life that we all have a privilege to be running in. So that's why it's important to me. It's important because I believe everybody should live a dream life. Everybody should be able to do everything they want to do. So,
yeah, and I think that's great.
Sorry about the long explanation.
No, not at all. I mean, it's a real conversation that we have. And I would say that a lot of people want that too, but they don't necessarily know how to get that. And so you growing a company from 150 million consistently in sales per year, and throughout a decade has been mentioned that you've been able to obtain over $1 billion in sales. So what is that like? Like, how were you able to get there? Because I'm sure it all started with zero, and it grew into something much bigger than what it is now. So could you give us the initial processes or procedures that you used in order to grow that business?
Kind of funny. I mean, we started out just wanting to put 100 seats together and take calls for the U.S. Hispanic market.
Yeah.
And for us, it was client driven. We had a campaign that was doing really well. And the client just needed more and more space. They were doing more. They were doing like a 5-to-1 in Spanish versus like a 2-to-1 in English. So Spanish was driving their growth and driving their retail. And so they just kept spending money. And that was kind of we had to move quickly. And we didn't really build out our core values until we had about 1,000 employees. I always recommend people do that first and foremost. I mean, I kind of think that's one of the things I wish I could have done sooner, because it took us longer to implement and to get buy-in on our core values, because we already had those people that were here. And the process that we went through was awesome to get those core values done. But yeah, we kind of already had those 1,000 people in place. But really, listen, some of the hard things is the people that got you to $1 million can't get you to 10 million.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times you have to fire people who are talented and who have done great things for your company, but they've reached their level of ignorance, if you know what I mean.
No, totally. I would love for you to expand on that, because that's huge. I mean, what's going to get you to 100 isn't going to get you to 500. What got you to 500 isn't going to get you to 1,000 and to whatever the number increments are. Could you expand greater on that, please?
Yeah, it's so we had a guy who was running our operations, and he was incredible. He would work, I mean, not that work is a prerequisite to being good, but this guy would be up at 3 a.m, 5 a.m. I mean, he would be all the time managing all these little things. And when we were a company doing 5 to 7 million, he really could manage all of those pieces. But when we got to 10 million, this guy was micromanaging everything. And as a result, he was firing people left and right because they didn't live up to his expectation. And he was getting behind, and really, because he didn't trust the people around him, he couldn't execute. He became handcuffed by his own inability to do. I mean, he wanted to do well. That's the hard part in this. And he was a rock star for us, getting us to 5 to 7 million. This guy is somebody who today I still appreciate, even though we had to go through the hard process of letting him go. He had just gotten to this point where the revolving door was because of him. And so we were like, you know, okay, unfortunately, we've got to let him go. And the same thing happened in our tech. We went through 5 or 6 CFOs who just didn't understand the intricacy of what we were trying to do. It was the same throughout our business in almost every key position, is that those people just couldn't do it. So
that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I like to hear your honest opinion, because you started this business back in 2001. And I would say it was in the very early beginnings of the .com. It was in the very beginnings of this like call centers were very much so a thing. So how much do you think it was about luck, so to speak, and hitting the market at the right time versus the wall, the systems, the processes that you created in order to scale the business?
I think luck has a lot to do with everything. I think in our case, there weren't really any other companies that were taking Spanish media. So we were kind of the only ones who had all the tools put in place. And so as a result, a lot of people wanted to work with us. Mm. So that was part of it, you know, from a luck standpoint. But the other part of it was I had been doing consulting for other companies around the country for the last, you know, what, 7 to 10 years. And I had this experience to offer this huge, I was one of the best copywriters in the country for phone center stuff. So everybody wanted to work with me.
Yeah.
So that was a talent that I had. So part of it's talent, part of it's luck and timing. You know, the Spanish market 2 years earlier didn't have credit cards. 2 years later, there was other call center servicing. And from a timing standpoint, you know, from a timing standpoint, I was right there in the right time.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. So when you are getting, so you have this company, it's X number of companies, it's X number of employees. Now I think the company culture aspect, the word, you use the word unbreakable, right? So where does the unbreakable company come from? Because you have this foundation, right? You built, you're focusing on the employees' dreams. You're working on company culture, but now it needs to be unbreakable. Because from what I've seen, you kind of have this high and low period of this romantic honeymoon, so to speak, when you bring on a new team member. And you know, you kind of have to keep them engaged to as much as you possibly can. So I'd love to hear your definition of what an unbreakable company is.
Well, part of this is figuring out what people's talents are, make sure they're in the right seat on the bus. Part of it is, so an example of unbreakable company is one of our clients went to retail and they cut their media in half. And we literally went from making $50,000 a week to losing $70,000 a week. Mm-hmm. And without good culture, that would have caused a lot of problems in our business. And in order to fix it, we had to change our routing strategy. So some people who were getting a lot of calls all of a sudden weren't getting a lot of calls. We had to change our commission plan up and focus more on different parts of the phone call. And so people's pay was affected. And there were a lot of, you know, in a call center, there's always a lot of change. And so if our core value wasn't to keep an open mind and to have each other's back and to possess a desire to improve and 100% effort, 100% heart, if we didn't have these core values in place, a lot of people would have gotten upset and the company culture, you know, could have really caused a lot of problems. We could have had a lot of lawsuits. People would have, you know, felt like they weren't part of the family, part of the team. We also shared everything openly. We said, look, here's what we have to do to survive. So we did finance calls every week, and almost everybody in the company knew where we were financially. And so we didn't try to hide the fact that we were in trouble. We tried to be transparent in what we did. We told people what we were doing and the reasons we were doing it. And we put a plan together that everybody believed in. Mm-hmm. And so we had everybody swimming in the right direction. And it took us a few months. But over the next few months, we had some people leave voluntarily, which helped cut our payroll costs. We had the majority of our best performers take more phone calls, which allowed us to perform better, which allowed the media to go back up. So instead of going from, you know, 1,000 employees down to 400, we had a few people who left because the calls weren't there, and we told them they could come back. And then we also, because the best performers started taking more phone calls, instead of dropping our call, you know, our calls from 40,000 calls a week to 20,000, we ended up picking up another 10,000 calls. So we had a good meeting in the middle and ended up having our best fourth quarter. All those things happen because of culture.
Yeah. No, yeah, absolutely. No, love it. Love what you're saying and agree wholeheartedly. You specifically talk about some of the bumpy the bumpy courses that you hit along the way. And, you know, the highs are highs in entrepreneurship. You know better than anybody else because you've lived it for several years. But the highs are highs and the lows are lows. When you hit a bump in the road, a fork in the road, what are some things that you do mentally to prepare yourself for that? Because I'm sure it correlates back to your company culture.
So when you have a crisis, you have to really focus, and you have to focus on what you can't control, and you've got to keep your mind off the things you can't control. So as an example, I mean, I give a lot of real life examples, especially in my book. We had a client, a big flower client, and they hired us to take calls for Valentine's Day and Mother's Day. And they ramped up to about 300 agents. And at the end of January, as the ramp up was happening, we sent them a bill. And all of a sudden, understand that we had a 6-month relationship prior where everything was fine. All of a sudden, they didn't want to pay the bill. Hmm. And they said, oh, we only want to pay for logon time. Now, to build for Valentine's Day, you have to hire 300 people. But the reality is you don't need those 300 people until January. So December, our employee bill for December was like $230,000. Mm-hmm. And if they were only going to pay for logon time, they were only going to pay me $202,000. So mm-hmm. I was literally going to lose money on my payroll before I even looked at the seat cost and the long distance. I was literally building their business for them. I was an investor. I mean, I should have had equity in the company if I was going to run it that way. But they didn't need all those bodies because Valentine's Day, it's really the first 2 weeks of February that are the craziest. But in order to have, you know, 400 bodies for Valentine's Day, you've got to hire them all in December and January.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But they didn't want to pay for those people in training. They didn't want to pay for them to be in our building. But I had to pay them. But I can't just train 200 people. Old. And most companies know that there's a ramp cost in order to be profitable during your busiest time of the year. These guys just really, I guess they had made it an annual business to switch call centers year over year. But they didn't want to pay us that much. They said, we have 200,000, take it or leave it. And we agree that maybe we should do something different. So we'll talk about it after Valentine's Day. As soon as that happened, they said, we're in trouble. Take the 200 and let's get out of this. Hmm. And of course, Valentine's Day, we have 14-day terms. So they sent us the check on the 14th. I mean, Valentine's Day was there. So we were already through February. Hmm. So they didn't even pay us at the end of February. All in, they owed us $1 million. And they didn't pay us anything but $200,000. So we had to sue them. But in the meantime, I've got this mess. I've got 400 employees. If I fire them, I've got to pay severance. I don't have any phone calls, right? Because we're fired the client for sure. I've got a lawsuit that I got to think about. But what I did was I basically put my brain into lockdown mode and I said, okay, what can I control? Lawsuits out of my control. Goodbye. 400 employees. How do we mitigate this? What I did, this is going to be hard to swallow, right? But what we did as a company is we recommended to the flower company that they open their own shop in the same town we're in. We basically invited them to be a competitor. Why did we do that? Because when you fire an employee in Mexico, you have to pay 3 months severance. But if they leave voluntarily, then you don't have to pay the severance. So we encourage them to stay in the same city as us and to move in, and we found them a building. We made it very easy for them. And they literally stayed, so we were able to transfer almost all those employees back to them and avoid the fee. Yeah. I had to think this way, even though I hated what was happening and hated their company, right? I'm angry, but I had to think strategically. You have to button down in your brain what you can control and stay away from the things you can't. And I knew I had to find a way to eliminate those employees without having to pay all the severance on top of all the other money we just lost.
Yeah.
I wanted to keep the best of the best. So I went to one of our inbound partners and begged them to let us test taking some inbound English calls. They were all English speaking. We didn't have it in our strategic plan to do English sales, but I was like, you know what? We can do sales in English and compete. Not only did we compete with the agents we had, I actually did the training myself, and I don't do that anymore, but I, I knew we needed a win. So I spent 2 weeks training these agents on how to take inbound sales phone calls. And when we competed against the U.S. center, we were at $20 revenue per call while they were at 12. So we almost doubled their performance. So that allowed the client to start shifting more and more calls. So we went from 5,000 calls to 20,000 calls in order to upgrade, you know, in order to overcome the loss of the other phone calls on the from the flower company. So we were in trouble, and then we went through this turnaround and we executed and we kept our mind on the things we could control. We let the things out of our control go, and we tried to be strategic and not emotional. I mean, I don't know if anybody else would have been as strategic as we were in how we worked with the client that just screwed us in order to help them. I mean, it was hard to swallow, but I think we did the right thing.
Well, it's definitely hard to swallow, but it's also another thing to kind of have your ego. It's also ego too, because here you are angry to some degree, trying to think logically. I'm curious, do you think that logical thought process is it because of your experience, or is it just because of trained thought, or is it something that you were just born with? I'm curious to hear your opinion on that.
I think you have to train your brain to think that through every dark cloud, there's a positive outcome on the other side. You literally have to say, how can this shitstorm, pardon the expression, but how does this make us better? And how do I use this as an opportunity to create a stronger company?
Yeah.
And I think you have to train your brain to think of, okay, where are the positives and how do we come out of this in the best light? I think it's training. I don't think you're born with it. I think it's training. I think you got to get up every day and look at all the negative things that happen in your life and say, okay, what is the opportunity around this?
Yeah. Do you think, I mean, this is just like more of a fun question, but do you think the most recent example that you gave, how do you think the old version of Craig would have been able to solve that solution?
I think there was a time where when I was younger and more naive, when emotionally I would have gotten angry. I would have been emotionally caught up in the lawsuit. I would never have seen the idea of helping them relocate in the same town as us.
Yeah.
I just would have been so emotional around it, you know, and I think that's a problem that we all have is we get blinded through emotion and it slows us down. And that's why I get paid the big bucks as a consultant, because some people are younger in their life cycle and they are emotional, and I'll give them that solution and save them $1 million.
Yep. Yeah. No, I love it. When I was doing my research on about you and your book, and I found a particular quote that I thought was pretty interesting. It was by Kevin Harrington, the original shark on Shark Tank, and inventor of the infomercial. I'm going to kind of just like paraphrase the quote, but I just want to kind of hear your perspective on it. Where is it? I lost my point.
Is it the quote where Kevin was talking about me in my book?
Yeah. Here it is. So where you're constantly reinventing yourself to create value. How have you been able to reinvent yourself in so many different ways, and how has that made you successful?
It's that same mentality of what can I control?
Yeah.
And what can I control? And I originally was a call center agent in a phone center taking phone calls. And then I told people that I was a copywriter. And I basically take what I was saying on the phones and turn it into a script. And then I told people I was a trainer and I would train them on my script. And then I was getting hired across the country and I said, look, I can write a training manual for you that will enhance your agent performance, because I'm one of the best copywriters in the world for phone center scripts, and I can improve your close rate, but I can really improve it if I train the agents on how to read my script. Mm-hmm. And so I started doing all of those things. And my relationship with Kevin goes back over 20 years. And I used to be in his office when he was in the infomercial world. And I was a copywriter. Well, next thing you know, I was actually consulting with him on his infomercials. And I was talking about writing different calls to action. It was only an extra couple thousand dollars to basically put together four or five call to actions in an original production. So instead of just, hey, it's $19.95, also try it now risk-free for just $5.99. Also, and then I would write the copy. I would charge him four different times for different copy to answer the phone calls for every type of offer. Then we'd measure the ROI on the different offers that we had. And so originally with Kevin, I was just writing scripts. Well, then I was like, well, let's write different offers and I'll write different scripts to different offers. And so I was always coming up with new ideas in order to have Kevin want me in his office. You know, it was always something new that I could bring to him. And sometimes, look, sometimes I had some of the dumbest ideas on the planet, but sometimes they were gold.
Right. Now, I've always been a proponent of phone calls and speaking to people on the phone. And I think there's a level of success that a lot of tech companies could have when it comes to call centers and cold calling, et cetera. What would you say could be the benefit? Do you see a need for outbound phone calls, call center type of outreach to obtain sales in the tech community, so to speak? Is there a need for it? Do you see opportunity there?
Absolutely.
And since you do, what would you say could be some steps in order to help you get there?
Well, so when you say in the tech space, I'm not sure if you're referring to a product or a service.
Let's just go service based.
With almost every product or service, for example, we're working with a big new pharmaceutical company who just launched a new drug. We're calling dentist offices across America to introduce them to their new brand. Behind that, there's copy that goes out from an email. Then we actually call them to set up an appointment with a sales rep. We're running a multimedia campaign to drive consumer interest on the backbone of it. So this is a brand that had spent $1 million on marketing and had generated 42 dentists that were using their product in a year after spending $120 million on getting the drug approved by the FDA. So you look at that, and without the call center, I mean, with the call center, we've only been going for a couple of weeks, but we've already got like 380 emails that have gone out, and we're starting to set up our follow-up calls. We're going to actually sign up 3,000 dentists within a matter of months, as opposed to 42 in a year, and it's going to cost a lot less than $1 million. The same thing can be said in any profession. You know, the legal profession is another one where, you know, if people have, if there's a lot of class action opportunity, if they run a TV ad or a radio ad or an internet campaign to create a lead, we can call and get more details and make the lead that much more valuable.
Yeah.
It can be said in the tech industry. If you have an interest, a call center agent can find out what that interest is and figure out how to put that lead into a better bucket.
Love it. Love it. Well, awesome stuff, man. I just love this conversation about culture, making people stay, sales, which is near and dear to my heart. If people wanted to go out and research more about this idea of hired to quit, inspired to stay, where can people find it?
Well, my book's on Amazon. I highly recommend they grab it and read the chapters that really apply to them. There's a couple of chapters on culture and dream trust. Real easy to navigate that and to find value in what that is. I have, you know, I'm easy to find. If they Google Craig Handley, I'm on Facebook, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on, you know, I'm all over the place. And I try to be very supportive with companies and brands. I mean, somebody shouldn't feel like if they call me, I'm going to want 10 grand from them just to have a conversation. I am happy to support entrepreneurism. I'm happy to support, you know, entrepreneurs in whatever way that I can. I mean, obviously they should be respectful, but I like to be supportive. I'm a humble human being. I've done a lot of cool things, but I feel like just an average, ordinary Joe all the time. And I feel like I'm blessed to be where I'm at. And so I'm blessed to have conversations with people that seek my advice. And so I try not to, I try not to take that lightly. I try to see the joy in helping other people to see success.
That's great. I mean, the things that you do, which we didn't even really talk about in this conversation, but how you give back is another thing that is truly inspiring. There, right before this conversation, I noticed at least that you were just featured in Time Magazine as a where you had, you were literally in the same conversation of people like Damon Johns and Shaquille O'Neal and Richard Branson. So, I mean, again, this guy, if you're listening, is the absolute real deal, and he is true to his word, because I had a brief conversation with him on social media and then through email, and so kind for you to take time out of your day in order to share this value. So, Craig, we really appreciate it. And all of the links will be in the show notes, so you could check that out there. Craig, thank you so much for your time. You've been listening to Blind Entrepreneurship, brought to you by Penji. Our guest this week was Craig Hanley. All right, listeners, it's that time again. I'm sending a worldwide challenge to those that are listening. This week, I'd like you to go out of your comfort zone and do something you know you need to do and have been making excuses as to why you haven't done it yet. And when you do that one thing, tweet me at GrisbowskiJ or head over to tbeshow.com and drop a comment on this week's episode. You can find more about Craig directly in the show notes. I'm not going to list out all of the URL. You can go to Amazon if you so choose and just search for Hired to Quit or his name, which is Craig Hanley. Either of those will direct you to it. But again, all of the notes and all of the links are in the show notes below. And as for me, you can check out Penji at penji.co if you need on-demand graphic design support for your business. And head over to our podcast website, which is tbeshow.com. This podcast is displayed on all major podcast networks, so make sure you do us a huge favor and share this with a friend. Send a link over if you find this valuable. It would mean the absolute world to us, and it's the only way that we can cure blindness in business. To those of you that are still listening, go out there and execute your vision. Have a great, great, great rest of your day.